Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. This is our first remote piece coming from LA. We're going to be covering more events, more things, more people, more food out here, coast to coast, with the food that's the most. We have the Infatuation Dudes in the conference room in beautiful Santa Monica.
A windowless conference room.
You know, when you think of California, windowless conference room is like what they should put on the Wish You Were Here postcards.
Yeah, exactly.
So welcome. You guys had an event last night, right?
We did. It was our first ever official Los Angeles event.
And how did that go?
Great. We were really happy to be here, and it's just
cool. We did a sushi and salad and taco party with ice cream and
all in one
and poke. Is that how you pronounce it? I
don't know.
I don't understand.
I think it's poke. I think it's a pokey once. Yeah. It's pretty good.
It was cool. We had a really good lineup of vendors. We had Sweet Green and Sweet Fin poke and McConnell's ice cream and Sugarfish and Mexicali tacos and
How good is Mexicali?
Mexicali is terrific. I want to go there and eat. I've never been there to eat.
It's awesome. It's so simple. Why don't you guys introduce yourself and talk about how you two met? Was it 2008, 2009 when you guys met?
No, we met in 1999 or something.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm Chris. I am one half of the Infatuation.
I'm Andrew. I am the other half of the Infatuation.
Although now we're actually like two halves of like nine segments, yeah. So it's different. I'm one ninth of the Infatuation.
We're half of the original Infatuation, and now there's just a lot more.
Anyway, yeah, so we met, Andrew and I met back in somewhere around the eve of the millennium, on the set of TRL, believe it or not.
Carson Daly?
No, like the heat of Carson Daly, like the hottest of hot Carson Daly when like people were lining up outside the studio. We were not actually just lining up ourselves, even though I probably would have at that time in my life. But
Carson Daly was it for a while.
That was who we both wanted to be.
Yeah, exactly. That was why we were there, basically.
Men wanted to be him. Women wanted to be with him.
The whole thing. But so we met through we were both at the time music directors at our respective college radio stations. We were still in college. So someone we knew was like filling the audience with people from college radio, and we both got a phone call and then got there and we're like, oh, you seem cool. And then that was really like the beginning of our friendship, and we both ended up in New York City in 2002 after school, and then started marching on a path to reviewing restaurants, I guess, but not really. We kind of started in the music business first. So
yeah, I mean, you guys followed that awesome trend of music guys who got into food, which now is, I don't even think a trend, I think it's just so normal that so many ex-music guys wound up working in food in some part.
Yeah, I mean, like,
what drew you to that? I mean, what do you think why that's such a natural leap these days?
I think it's a similar craft almost. Like, people who care about what they eat care about what they listen to.
Yeah.
If you're particular about one or the other, you have good taste, you know? And it seems that, in general, you know, the people that are in the music industry and listening to good music and they go out and they find stuff, like, they also care about where they're going to eat.
Well, I think the thing, too, is, like, I think it's actually, there's probably a lot of people in a lot of industries that are like, oh, you're leaving finance to go into food. I think, like, just a lot of people that are passionate about food, like, started pursuing it, you know, sometime in the middle of the last decade. But,
I mean, it's definitely, you know, we have that conversation all the time and about, is food the new rock? And we always say it's not. It's just that food finally hit the same pop culture status as art, music, things like that.
You know, it's always funny. Like, it's actually kind of like the reason we started, you know, the Infatuation was like, it's not like a unique thing to love food, right? Like,
no,
fucking everyone loves food on some level.
Your grandma loves food, and that's not an insult.
Yeah, and like, and that was what was so funny is like, we were, you know, like the word foodie to us was such a funny thing because it's like suddenly you're like congratulations, you love food. Wow, that's awesome. You gave yourself a name for it, and it's a really bad one. But it was, that was a big part of why, you know, what happened was basically we were just, you know, two guys that were working in the music industry and, you know, sort of had the same group of friends, and we were the two guys in our group of friends because of our jobs. We were just out all the time and really passionate about restaurants and eating out. And we had, you know, shows to go to during the week and, you know, people to take out to dinner beforehand and corporate cards. We would go
those days.
No, but I mean, we were out a lot. And so our friends who were, you know, commercial real estate guys and finance guys who just weren't, you know, out running around the city as much as we were, would sort of end up calling us to be, you know, to be the people to help them find the place to take the girl they're trying to impress for dinner. And one day, literally over, you know, beers at Spitzer's Corner, which, you know, back in 2009 was the hottest shit ever.
Oh my God, it was.
It was, right?
People hanging out the windows.
People were like, I think it's called the Gastro Pub. yeah, so we were...
Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's English. I'm pretty sure it's English. Anyway, yeah, so we were just having a conversation one day and talking about, like, why don't our friends, like, have a resource for that, you know? And
yeah.
Yelp was pretty, you know, still pretty new at the time, but there was already just, like, ridiculous fatigue over it, you know? And we just thought, you know what, like, maybe we can be a resource for more people than our friends, you know?
It seemed like there wasn't a resource out there for regular people to just find restaurants, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we were New York Magazine users, and... there were a couple things to check to search by, like Critics Pick or whatever, but I always wanted more, right? Like, I was always like, damn, like, I just want to know, like, this is close to Bowery Ballroom, or like, maybe this is good to, like, see some hot girls, or if you like it, hot guys, whatever.
Yeah, or hot girls and hot guys.
Both, right? Yeah. Like, hot people, or is this a good place for your parents, or whatever it is. And there was nothing out there that kind of, like, real talk told you what the deal was and, like, represented the lifestyle of young
people. And what would happen, like, you know, like, especially, like, on the back pages of New York Magazine, which I used to use a lot, right? Like, I just moved to the city.
Oh, the heat index?
Well, like, whatever it was.
Yeah,
there was, like, the back pages, and there'd be, like, new restaurants and stuff. And they had, like, three sentences worth of room to dedicate towards, like, whatever that little blurb was going to be. And almost without exception, two of those sentences would reference what the chef's name and then what other restaurant I've never heard of that he just came from.
Right.
And so I was, like, you know, we would just sort of, we would talk about it and be like, I don't really, like, I'm not trying to choose a restaurant based on this person who I'm sure is very talented, but, like, I've never heard of him, nor have I heard of the restaurant that he was at previous to that. Like, tell me why to go here, right? Like, what's the proposition? And so that was what we started trying to think through, is, like, the whys of people go to restaurants, and often it's a lot more than just, I love to eat great food, so.
Hey, man, it's, and, you know, the thing is, though, back in the day, when money was not corporate card or something like that, wasting a meal was always such a pain in the ass, especially when, or if you had to recommend something to someone, and you wanted to always be the guy's like, here's a great place where you can eat, not blow your entire paycheck, and have, like, a great memory from there.
Well, I think actually, like, on the site, like, one of the first blurbs we had as to, like, why you should, you know, why we were doing this was, like, in a city with so many great options, like, why waste it on a, you know, a meal on a mediocre place? And, like, that's so true in New York, that there's just... there's no reason to go to a restaurant that isn't great because there's so many great restaurants. And so, you know, we just felt like if we could help people sort through those and be situationally relevant. And, like, the key also was, like, we wanted to be, like, funny and fun and, like, make it more – because, you know, the other thing we sort of built our whole, you know, thesis around was, like, reading a New York Times review and then seeing the word toothsome in there and being like, what does that even mean?
Unctuous.
Yeah.
Or something like
that.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I don't understand what that means. I don't know that thing you ate that was toothsome. Is that bad? Is it good? Did you lose a tooth? What happened? Like,
that chocolate just ripped my teeth out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. But real quick, from back in the day, favorite restaurant that you had that was, like, your go-to recommendation as everything was getting started?
I always, like, Freeman's was just one of those special places for me. Yeah. I sent everybody there.
Yeah, mine was the Blue Ribbon Brasserie because that was just such a good, like, late night spot and so special and still is, quite frankly.
I did Sambar.
Nice.
Yeah. I was like, if you want, this was like right after they switched from doing the Korean burritos. I was, people were like, I want that New York experience. I was like, East Village, go there.
What's so funny? It's all three of those restaurants are still the exact same thing.
But that's
what's great about
it. All right, so we're gonna play a quick song from Built to Spill, who I just saw at the Troubadour. Never been to the Troubadour. Went last week. Thanks to Travis Hayden for getting me there. This is Built to Spill here on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Oh man, Built to Spill. Never tired of that. I think I've been listening to them since 96, 97.
Oh man. I mean, both of us were in college radio. That was a staple.
Yeah,
staple.
And I worked at Warner Brothers Records for a lot of my career.
So I mean, they keep putting out records.
They're so consistent.
Yeah, there will still never be anything better than like Carry the Zero. Like those songs are so.
They did at Troubadour. They did Carry the Zero as the last song of the set, and yes. He just took a shred. He took us to Shred Town.
Love it.
I was in a fantasy basketball league with Doug once. It was awesome.
Could he play? Can he hoop?
He was good. Yeah, I mean like fantasy. So he picked. He picked good players. Yeah. I don't know about his actual
I went to him in long shorts and high socks, like just
never seen
like
it.
That's the way dudes talk about fantasy. Though they're like, yeah, I can ball.
I can ball. I can ball. So with the Infatuation guys here, we are out in LA, and you know, you guys started 2009 and. Recently, I mean, with the hashtag the 5 E's,
always
5 E's, eats and everything. You guys have really had a tipping point, which I know is another.
Well, yeah, a big part of that tipping point was us. You know, we built this thing for 5 years. While we had full time jobs, while we were working in the music business, and then
side hustle
until it got to the point where it was undeniable what we needed to. We knew to see this through, and we needed to put our full attention towards it to hopefully. Have it become what we always hoped it could become.
Yeah.
So we left our jobs last April and kind of like really started to fuel the fire, and that's kind of where the quicker rise started.
Yeah, and I think like what you're getting at too is that we also, you know, we've always tried to be smart about how we reach people with, you know, we always kind of knew like community was going to be a big part of this, and you know, we don't have commenting on the site for a reason. You know, we didn't want people to just sort of like be able to jump in right after you spend, you know, days and days crafting an excellent restaurant review, and then some asshole at the end of it's like, sucks.
And then whoever
I would see that. I would read things sometimes, and some asshole would totally change the way I thought about it because he made a stupid comment. So we felt like we wanted to engage the community, but we wanted to do it in, you know, smart ways. And so when we launched in whatever it was, 2009, 2010, when Twitter was sort of really becoming, you know, top of mind and regular people were using it, we really got into Twitter and started using that to connect with people and to build community and to just talk to people. And that was where the conversation happened for us rather than on the website itself. And so the next sort of evolution of that was Instagram when it came around, and we sort of saw that as another opportunity and quite honestly a better one because food is so visual and, you know, it was a better place to sort of really engage. And so that was really what, you know, started a sort of next phase of what we are now and kind of led us to where we are now is we decided to do, you know, use Instagram as our next community building tool. And that's what led us to the Eats hashtag.
Why 5 E's? Where the first was like 1, 2, 3, 4.
Why not 5 E's? Like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
The more ridiculous, the better.
No, I mean,
it's a branding thing, right? It was like, to us, it was one of those things where it's, you know, it was like, let's, you know, we knew that like people weren't going to be super excited about tagging their photos with like, Instafatuation or like something like that, you know? And so
it's totally fun and it's totally, I mean,
yeah, and like who doesn't want to just be like eats?
How many and what's the number at right now for how many photos have been tagged?
Over a million. We're cranking right now.
You're cranking.
I mean, we're doing like almost, we were doing up to like 10,000 a day.
One of the funniest things and like the coolest things I heard somebody say to me, which a younger person than us, which is even better, when someone found out that we had created Eats, they were like, wait a minute, I thought that was just a thing like TBT. And I was like, that's pretty crazy when it's sort of come in, like to some people, it's just part of the language of Instagram, which
but
is,
it is.
Yeah. And that's a phenomenally crazy thing to think about. But
I would say when you tag a good food photo now, you just throw that on there.
Yeah.
And it's great.
The quality is really good too. Like the quality of the eats in general, compared to most other food hashtags that are really big, is really, really, really good. 1,061,520. That's what we're at.
That's a lot.
It's bigger than us. It's become bigger than us.
Like, isn't it nice though? It's crazy. Isn't it nice to sort of have something become bigger than you?
Yeah, and it helps. You know, we were able to fuel it in the beginning by really giving people a voice and like making it almost a competition so that they could get regrammed on our account. And always our whole proposition always has been that like, listen, this is representing a group of people. Like, the Infatuation is about everyone. It's not just about me and Chris. It's about everybody who just likes to go eat and have a good time and, like, live a good fun life. And, like, by giving people a voice and offering people a slot on our, you know, Instagram they all got really excited and people got fired up when they got regrams, and you kind of realize that this is something that people want. And
well, and I think, like, even like to us, it was just like proof of the way we think about things, that, you know, that food is something that should be fun and not stuffy and not like, you know, for elite people who are chefs or home chefs or went to culinary, you know, it should be for everybody. And like, that's really the real sort of like the way we approach everything we do. And so to see, you know, we literally talked about it, like, let's just literally get people to tag their photos with eats. Like, it's so just good. It's just a silly thing, but it's fun. And it's not, you know, it's not, it's sort of like, it just makes it like accessible almost, right? Like, everyone can participate. And so to see it blow up like that to us was just like proof of like the way we're thinking about things is right, that like people just want to have fun, and like food's a fun thing, and it doesn't need to be so like top heavy from, you know, culinary perspective. And like, there's a role for all of those places. Like, we always talk about, like, we're not Bon Appetit and we're not the New York Times, and those are both great, you know, amazing institutions that we love and read and respect a lot, but like, we just think we kind of represent the more, you know, the more casually interested but still very interested person that loves food and loves to eat, but maybe has no idea how to, like, you know, cook a ribeye, or you know, really has no idea what sous vide even is, right? Like, and you know, so for us, the Instagram thing was just an extension of what we've been doing, and it's been an amazing one. It's been a great way for us to reach people, and it's just been really cool to watch it grow.
It's so awesome. Now, speaking of growth, you guys are in a bunch of other cities, but recently you launched in LA, which is awesome and speaks a lot to the LA culinary movement, which has been happening over the last few years. People have always been New York versus San Francisco, and I think LA is coming up from behind on San Francisco.
Oh, definitely.
What made you decide to move out here, and how often were you coming out here, and where were you eating before you made that decision to launch?
Just because of the music business stuff, we were both out here a lot, just because, you know, Andrew was at Warner Brothers, which is headquartered out here. I was at Atlantic, and, you know, you even see it, like, you know, kind of playing into all of this stuff is like, look, we're three New Yorkers sitting in a conference room in Los Angeles. Like, you know, creatives especially are having to leave New York because it's so expensive.
It's
and
crazy.
So, and that's true for San Francisco as well. Yeah. And so Los Angeles is not cheap, but certainly, like, you can live on the East Side and have a house, and it's probably a better lifestyle than if you're living in some small, you know, apartment in Bed-Stuy. Like, at least you can go outside here. So,
especially, I mean, it's the difference is not so apparent now. Give it, like, 6 months.
Yeah, totally, yeah. And I think, like, the thing is just that we always, just because of our music business background, had a huge amount of friends out here and connections and people that had been reading the site for a really long time. And that wasn't true for San Francisco or Chicago or Denver or any other places we launched. So it would also, you know, we wanted to get out here and we wanted to make sure that we did it right. And so that's actually why we kind of waited for a beat and we didn't sort of rush right to Los Angeles second. Just because we wanted to make sure that we got it right. So, and it took a while to find the writers and all that stuff, but we really, you know, we launched it, you know, really technically this week, and it, you know, feels like we got it right, we hope. So
awesome. And so where are you eating out here? What are you liking out here?
Here we go. This week we've been on a little bit of a greatest hits tour. It's pretty fun. You know, we have all four writers out here who are covering LA for us. And they've been kind of setting up a nice little schedule. We went to Night Market Song, which was...
Shout out to Chris.
Yeah, which was fantastic. We had a really good meal there. I had my first Apple Pan burger, which I was pretty excited about.
Yeah.
Not the best burger in the world by any stretch of the imagination.
Cool. However, LA experience, though.
A very cool LA experience, and I would definitely eat that burger again.
The Night Market Song thing was such a funny, like, LA, but also just sort of like a statement as to, like, where we all are. Is we were all at this, you know, big table, and it was actually one of our employees' birthdays, and we were kind of hanging out and having a good time, and then, like, the whole place, like, stopped, and, like, people started chattering and buzzing, and, like, it was because John and Vinny had walked in the room, and everybody was just like, oh my God, it's them. And it was so funny, because you would have, like, that, just funny that these two dudes are, like, on that level now, where, like, they walk into a restaurant and the whole place is just like,
dude, I can't wait for their new place, which is literally going to be, like, half a block down from Song.
No, it's great. So, it was just funny, but that's a good example as to, like, why we wanted to be here, is, like, people are really excited about great restaurants.
Yeah.
And guys like John and Vinny have really made this, you know, really amazing name for themselves and built a cool thing, and, you know, not that, I don't know, like, we go to San Francisco, and there's great restaurants in San Francisco, and there's obviously people that you know, like, love food, and it's always been such an amazing food city. But it's kind of cool to see, like, a place like L.A. where there's a really such a wide diversity, right? Yeah. Like, you know, San Gabriel Valley is, like, a whole thing in itself, and the ethnic food here is great, and, like, the, you know, the high-end food is great, and the, you know, sort of lowbrow food is great. So it's been cool. But it's also meant that we've had to approach it completely differently because, because, if, you know, when it was Andrew and I, like, reviewing restaurants in New York, like, geographic location for either of us wasn't a problem. It's not like I was going to go to the Upper West Side because I lived, like, 20 blocks north of Andrew. It was, you can kind of move around where you want to. But here, like, we needed someone that could be the San Gabriel Valley person and also someone that could be, like, the Santa Monica, Venice, like, West Side person, because those people don't move back and forth that much. And so that was actually a big challenge for us, is trying to figure out, like, do we have enough people in each geographic location to make it, to kind of make it work? And do we have the right people that know, like, because you have to, like, you know, Jonathan Gold's out here. Like, if you're going to propose to people that you're going to be a great resource, you have to be able to do the kind of stuff that he does, which is go to these places in the San Gabriel Valley that have great, you know, Dan noodles or whatever it is. Yeah. But you also have to be able to go to, you know, the new place out here, Cassia, that is the guy from the Spice Table that those people care about too. So, and it's not usually the same person that does both of those things.
Well, I want to thank you guys. I know you guys are super busy.
No, it was great.
Thank you for showing beautiful LA.
Yeah.
I mean, the view from this room is just...
Yeah, I don't know if you saw. We have a really... it's really, like, fresh and high-tech. It's a, I think it's a 16-inch Philips.
Oh, man.
Actually, LCD television,
the
I think.
The future is now. Yeah. So, website, Instagram, Facebook. What's the best way people to find you? What's your preference? Is it Instagram?
Well, I mean, look, you know, come to the site, theinfatuation.com. That's where all the, you know, all the good stuff is and the stuff we write. But Instagram, and actually Snapchat's been really big for us, too. So follow us at Infatuation TV. Yeah, we're having fun with that.
Awesome. Awesome. And how long are you guys going to be out in L.A. for?
You know, we're here until some of us are going back Friday, some of us are going back Sunday. But we'll be back and forth a ton. I mean, we'll be here a lot. So next time we'll do this with windows.
Oh, awesome. We'll do it on the beach drinking some, like, rum something.
Yeah, great.
All right, well, thank you so much, guys. Here's one of our favorites from Japandroids here on Snacky Tunes.
All right. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We got Walt live in studio. Welcome, boys.
Hello. Thank you.
It's good to have you here on this early August breezy weekend. What's really great about the project is that there's a really strong aesthetic that comes with what you're doing, and I'm curious where that comes from and what some of your influences are.
I suppose it's from certain theatrics. I'm not sure. I like sequins and extravagant garments, I suppose. More than anything, it's just to have a bit of fun, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I know that you part of the upcoming release in the fall is a feature-length film. Where did the inspiration for that come, and how did you put that together in connection with the album?
Well, the album was done first. We tracked upstate New Paltz with Kevin McMahon, and we had like 12 tracks, and then we started to develop video content, and then it sort of grew into this monstrosity 65-minute VHS film. So it sort of started with a small piece, and then eventually became much bigger, you know.
What was the decision to jump from like, okay, we'll do a small thing, to like, yeah, we're going to just set this whole thing to video?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things that just sort of happened over time as it developed. It felt a little cheap to just put off a couple tracks as videos. We felt more inspired to make a full-length sort of body of work that we could sort of, you know, really tell a few different stories in, instead of just kind of making videos for the singles.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a few clips for the upcoming movie, but what are some of the stories that you're focusing on for the videos, or what's the narrative that you're telling?
Yeah, it's a little strange. I suppose essentially it's a workout exercise manual, sort of set in 1984. So it's one of those sort of throwback pop. It's a collection, I suppose, of VHS is essentially the focus point for me. It was like really sort of creating something that was a piece of time, you know, and something that I appreciated from that era. Like I like those old, really hyper cheesy visuals that come with the 80s, you know. So mm-hmm. We kind of essentially built this 65-minute version of that.
Any particular favorite exercises that came from that, or exercises that didn't work, that didn't make the cut?
Well, I'm trying to think of the name of the tool. The Thighmaster was one of the highlights for me personally. Yeah, it was exciting. It's actually quite difficult.
Is it really?
Oh yeah.
They make it look so easy on TV.
No, it's not easy at all. It's very difficult.
What are some of the tips for using the Thighmaster as a pro now?
Control, I suppose. Yeah. They're not very stable. It's very sort of, you know, you'd imagine that it'd just be a matter of sort of control and motion, and it's not the case. It's the things are very, very janky. You end up sort of doing more damage than good. Now, this is not supporting the Thighmaster in any way, but I do. You know, it was a good thing to try. It looks good. That's the main thing for us. It was more of a visual.
Visually, it's stunning. I would think that the rubber on the skin would hold it in place.
Yeah, but then you get sweaty, you see, and then it starts to slide out of place, and then it ends up like a spring.
Yeah.
Actually quite dangerous.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't we hear a song, and why don't you tell us what exercise our listeners should be doing while listening to the song?
Well, why not try the Thighmaster to this one?
Okay, great. And you're listening to Waltz live on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Awesome. Hope no one got injured out there with the Thighmaster.
Me too.
So I know that you recorded the record upstate. What was the process like in being a bit removed from the city and putting the record together?
It was middle of winter and miserable in that sense, although great at the same time. However, it was very cold. So we were tracking to tape, which is just not worth it. But we had like 15 minutes in, 15 minutes out, just to kind of warm up physically. But it was one of those things where we dealt with it. It was just very, very cold. And the producer had budgets on heat allowance.
Really?
Yeah, he wasn't really too comfortable. He kept on... We'd come back. We were sleeping there. It's a barn, so it's a large barn.
How long were you up there for?
About a week, I think. And he'd sort of sneak back in and just check if we had the heaters on or not, because he was...
Like dead of the night, like we'd walk in and just see if the...
Oh, yeah. Just popping in just to make sure, you know?
Like, hey, guys, brought you some beers and just want to make sure that...
Yeah.
It looks... We agreed at 72. It looks like it's at 78. We're just going to knock this...
No, he basically wouldn't allow it to be on in the first place. So. But it was one of those old, you know, those really expensive electric ones. So.
Saying recording to tape, I mean, now having gone through the process, do you say it's not worth it now and that you, if you did do it all again, you would just go digital, or it was good to do? And
it was good to go. I mean, we were under the impression that we were listening to mixes from the tape sessions, and it wasn't until, like, a few months ago that we were like, the producer was like, you know, these are all digital bouncers.
Oh.
And we're like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, yeah, your tape was shedding and it wasn't worth. And I'm like, well, you didn't tell us.
Oh.
You didn't let us know. But in comparison, I think it was good exercise wise to have the 15 minute sort of blocks, you know, where you sort of on and then you can sort of, you know, it's more execution based performance for me. You know, as in, like, we're rolling, you know, as you got 15 minutes to do a job and then you can, you know, reset. So that was good. I mean, the digital recording process, I haven't really delved in too deeply in a big, like, sort of production sense. But having unlimited time sometimes can be dangerous, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I am a big believer that constraints really push creativity. So, you know, recording to tape in the dead of winter probably is a little bit different than, like, summer, upstate, digital, just, like, long, lazy days type of vibe.
Yeah, although that sounds good.
Second one.
Next time. Yeah.
I do think that there is something about the cold that just really just, you know, accelerates, like, hunkering down and really kind of diving into it as opposed to, like, just a lazy... endless kind of meandering of time.
Yeah, it's time to show up and work, and that was good. That we, you know, we got a good result because of that, you know.
How many takes were you able to do per song given the according to tape?
I think we tried for like four or five. You know, you generally we had a clue, you know, when you know, we had a good idea when we when we had something we liked, we moved on, maybe got another try, but then we generally just kind of kept it moving, you know.
Got it. All right, well, let's hear another song.
All right.
What is the exercise to be done to this one?
The exercise to be done to this one is what?
Cross-dressing.
Oh, excellent exercise.
That is a very tasty exercise.
Yeah.
December, when I met this baby, around the back by the swing set. Oh, Caroline. Oh, kick your Caroline. Caroline, you go up, but I kick care about. Cause when Billy Brown, he was the toughest motherfucker in town. But with the shiny black boots and the silver bullet hanging around his throat, he took one look at me, rolled his eyes and smiled at me. He said, "You're Caroline. She's not my Caroline." Ooh. So I went down to the local muscle store and started lifting pound for pound to get my Caroline.
Who's Caroline?
Ooh, Caroline is fictional character, I suppose. Caroline is a mess. Yeah, Caroline is she's a beautiful lady, but a lady of mystery and a lady of wealth. But she's a definite mess. Yeah.
Okay. So you have a show coming up August 12th. What can the audience expect?
Yeah, we're playing at Rough Trade August 12th. The audience can expect some entertainment. It should be a good night. We're really excited about it. We've got a fun show that we're excited to, you know, bring.
Is there, if you could encourage the audience to participate in any way, how would you expect them? Or what would you ask of them?
Well, I suppose... Yeah, what would you suggest, Ian? Just
maybe some G-bangers.
And yeah.
You can bring your own weights.
Bring weights, G-bangers, and Thighmasters. We will have an aerobics prelude. And we will basically be scrapping the show and working out.
That's the biggest hustle. There's actually just show up with just a suitcase full of weights.
Yeah, that is it. If you show up with a suitcase full of weights, we will let you in for nothing.
Oh.
And you can join us on stage.
That's a good deal. So I want to make sure that we have time to get one more song in, but when can people expect the record out and the film out, and how can they follow along to make sure they don't miss it?
Well, we're going to put the film and record out in full. So, you know, late sort of September, October. And yeah, you can follow us online. We've got a bunch of websites that you can surf and gather important information. And we're basically, yeah, you can track us down on there, and then, you know.
Where is that?
Never miss a beat. Facebook, Instagram.
The name.
Oh, the name of the
Facebook. What is it right now?
Jeez. We're on Facebook.
All right,
we've established that. We are. I think it's I Am Waltz.
Okay.
It's the Facebook landing page.
And you can go down the rabbit hole from there.
You can definitely find it out. Or you can go to Waltz for Life with a 4, not a F. LYFE. To make sure you
totally miss it, can't find it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks to Emily for helping set this up. Thank you to The Infatuation. Shout out to Darren, Anna, Ornella, Mom, Dad, Joe, whoever else is out there. What are you going to take us out with?
This is a new song called Water Park, and it features a fourth member, and she sounds like this. Another actor seems to have lost his leg, but apparently he's keen to sign on for the second season. China! Time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.